I think the game, I was pretty hyped, and I mean that's part of the game. Like, it was not, nothing was intentional. Like, it's just part of the game. Like, I don't know. I don't want to hear that guy. I've been watching that guy since I was a kid. Like, I really feel proud of him. Like, what he's doing for the game. Just like, you know, like I say, just like the moment was his 10th close game. Like, I think it was just that.
My reaction was bad. I take that back. I apologize to the Chicago Cubs if I react the way I react, but I'm not trying to get another broken banner.
Mullion Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. It's another great song. It's nice to hear him apologize, and then you hear that it's too late to apologize.
Also, Wilson Contreras just saying that he's trying not to get a broken bone, reminding people that he did get hit and he did break a bone, and that's part of what's always going to be in his head when he is hit at the plate.
But he, Daniel Palencia, I thought that was really, he said he was proud of him for what he's done for the game. I think that's just great stuff for him to say that. He was the first voice you heard, and then you heard Willie saying.
Well, because Daniel Palencia understands as a teenager growing up in Venezuela what Wilson Contreras represented to every kid who played baseball. He's one of several examples that Major League is full of them. Venezuelan players from, you know, former players like Ozzie Guillen. It's just when you see somebody like Wilson who has represented his country well, himself well, like that, Daniel Palencia just reminded people that it wasn't personal. He wouldn't in any scenario be throwing at Wilson Contreras under those circumstances.
It's still funny.
But last year, remember, he was hit by Pablo Lopez in the middle finger, and he broke the middle finger in his right hand. And it was something that on August 24th, it changed the season for him, and he's been sensitive to that since. And I think he was just gently reminding people of why he might be so touchy under those circumstances. Not that Cub fans needed a reminder about Wilson Contreras being touchy under any circumstances. And Palencia's, let me ask you this, and maybe people have a thought. 312-644-6767. Did Palencia go too far with the celebration? I didn't see it that way. I didn't think you're a closer. You're only going to get, say, even the best closers, you're going to celebrate 35 to 40 times after a game. You're going to be intense, right? It's just the nature of the job. You're locked in. It's all or nothing. You're throwing heat. If you react after getting a strikeout to win the game, that's kind of like you're entitled to celebrate. I don't understand why it went too far.
It's the direction of the celebration.
This is Dustin, who felt that it was too excessive because he turned toward their dugout.
Spent too much of his frontal facing celebrating towards their dugout. If he did it the opposite way, I understand, but I would have been totally fine. I just think if it was 60-40, it was 60% towards the Cardinal dugout, and I understand why Wilson Contreras got upset. I personally, here, I want to let's pose another question, the audience as well, but to you two. I kind of posed this to David at the break. Mully, you stepped out for a second. Both you guys played collegiate sports at a pretty high level. I believe, Mully, I don't want to, but you played, you were on defense, right?
Yes.
Okay. And I know David was on defense. So if you, Mully, had allowed, if somebody somehow, some way, like on DePaul, had scored a game winner, the guy you were covering, and like stuck his chest out at either you or your bench, I don't think that would have gone over too well when you were 19, 20 years old.
I think I might have, you know, go blank yourself the guy, but that would be about
okay,
it.
Okay, but
and Dustin, first of all, that didn't happen.
Well, I didn't think it did. But if it had happened, the rare time, never. Never gave up a goal.
Never.
Good for you.
It's always the keeper's fault.
Always the keeper's fault.
Guy got by me.
Memory's the first thing to go.
And David, you know, again, if a tight end would have caught in the go ahead or game winning and like spiked the ball as David Haw's lane with a, you know, face full of turf in his helmet, I don't think that would have gone over very well.
What game
and I'm
film
not
are
saying
you,
you can't. I'm not saying you can't celebrate. You should celebrate. You should enjoy your moment. But it's how you do it sometimes.
Yeah, I suppose. But it's spontaneous. It's not planned. And it certainly isn't personal. And Wilson Contreras, of all people, should understand that in the heat of the moment, you do celebrate excessively sometimes. And yes, that's a song, In the Heat of the Moment, as Dustin
You're
dances.
Reading my lips? Heat of the moment.
We didn't need to hear that. We could read your lips.
Let him go. Come on.
Isn't that Asia?
This guy is in vacation mode.
He's got a song in his heart. Let it out.
Yeah. No.
No,
maybe not.
No.
Maybe
Take
not.
It easy. I won't have a beer anytime before noon today.
Okay. There we go.
Here he is.
It is.
Dustin Rhodes, ladies and gentlemen.
In the heat of the moment. No, we don't need to hear him sing.
He's bobbing his head like he's...
There we go. That's better. So... Contreras, according to one of the texters, says that he was chirping the whole time. Of course he was chirping the whole time. Of course, that's what he does.
That's who he is.
He got hit, and he got plunked, and he was mad. But he also represented the second run had he scored, and the tying run was at the plate. There's no way that was intentional.
Yeah. I mean, listen, you wanna celebrate, hit a home run, win the game.
Yeah. So that adds some spice to the rivalry, which needed some spice.
Yeah, I don't. It is a former rivalry. It is not a very good rivalry these days.
Cubs Cardinals?
I'm telling you, the Cardinals are on the way down. The Cubs are on the way up right now. It's just, the Cardinals loved winning a couple games, but I bet they hate the fact that they lost the last two.
Yeah.
And I don't think that they're competitive with the Cubs this year. I don't think the Cardinals scare me at all.
First two games, they took care of business pretty handily.
Yeah, and then they lost the next two pretty handily. They didn't get a run for 22
innings. I think it's a pretty good rivalry. I think the Cardinals have overachieved to this point. I don't expect them to be there in September.
Yeah.
But the Brewers will probably pass them. But for now, it's good. Plus, you have the ex-Cub factor with Contreras, and I kind of like it. Yeah,
I feel like the Cardinals can't do anything about it, and that's part of the frustration with Wilson Contreras.
Mm-hmm.
Seriously.
Yeah, I mean,
they had the card. Listen, the Cardinals had the Cubs on the ropes. I think Zach had a great tweet after the game yesterday, like, what a difference 2 days makes.
Yes.
Right? Like, I mean, 2 days ago, I was absolutely in
You're
a
on
full
the
sweat.
Ledge.
Right?
Yes.
I mean,
you had neck and back sweats.
I thought they might be lucky to get out of St. Louis with a half game lead. Right? I felt like those two losses felt like a 4-game sweep. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, the Cubs didn't allow another run. The statement game in game three was unbelievable.
Let that be a lesson to you.
Yeah. Oh, ye of little faith.
First two games, if they lose next time, just kind of take it in stride.
Boy,
don't have back sweats. Don't hyperventilate.
That'll be the day.
I know.
Ain't nothing going to break my stride.
Oh, my gosh. Oh my God. Is this guy in vacation
I'm
mode?
I'm telling you.
You set it up.
I did not set anything up. Low-hanging fruit.
I have to take it.
I'm trying to determine if we've ever seen him this
way. So, on to Houston and the Cubs and the Astros. This will be fun this weekend to keep a track of Kyle Tucker and Isak Paredes. And Matt Shaw versus Cam Smith.
But you said that Isak Paredes probably doesn't have like a big, strong feeling one way or another. He was brought in. He wasn't the answer. He didn't fit the ballpark. That was it, right? So they just moved him
on. But the trade was the trade. And it's interesting to see because the numbers aren't as different as you would like them to be right now, midway through the season. Here's his numbers. He's hitting 251, his last line, 251, 357, OPS of 820. He's got 16 home runs.
That's good.
46 runs batted in. His WAR is 2.5. Kyle Tucker, 287, 395, 922 OPS, 16 home runs, 49 runs batted in. Very similar. And his WAR is 3.4.
So let's say
they're more similar than you think.
Let's say they don't make that trade. Are the Cubs in first place?
if they don't make that trade and Paredes has this kind of production for the Cubs.
He's playing third base.
And Bellinger is in right field.
And Wisniewski is still here.
Somehow avoided Tommy John.
Yeah. He wouldn't have avoided.
Well, probably, you never know what you never know. You never know what happens where. And Cam Smith is playing.
Still in your system?
Yes. He's probably still in your system.
I'll do the Cam
system.
Smith, Matt Shaw comparison in a moment. Yep. But I think that's a good question to ask. Would the Cubs still have been in first place if they wouldn't have made the trade?
No. I think Kyle Tucker has had a huge, huge impact on this team and made them a better baseball team. And I think he's an excellent player.
I don't disagree with that. Anybody who disagrees with that doesn't
than
watch
sign
baseball.
Everybody else.
Everybody else?
On Houston, on that in that trade.
Okay, there's
no doubt.
Significantly
better.
Yeah. Would they be in first place in that division? You could argue that they
you could
still
make
would
that,
be.
Yes,
yeah.
I agree. You could make that argument. But, Mully, I agree. I mean, I think that what Tucker does to the lineup.
Yeah.
And that's the whole.
Right.
Would Seiya Suzuki be having the year he was having without Kyle Tucker in this lineup?
You know, that's a good point, and it's a fair question. I think sometimes when we point that out as often as we have, it diminishes what Seiya Suzuki has done himself, and he's come back. What are you laughing at?
Sorry. Mully said earlier that he's never seen me this way, and Brandon's having some fun back here, and there's a Mully drop saying this. No, I don't have it right now, but this is a doozy about Mully
Dustin,
saying,
you are as miserable as you've ever been.
So sorry, I kind of just had
that was a couple days ago.
It was about what happened after the Cubs were down 2-0 with two to go.
To make any sort of points this
see
morning.
See how different things can be after 2 days?
Yeah,
world of difference?
Definitely.
2 days makes?
It's so
definitely
true.
Different.
I mean, I think part of it is he's mentally already gone.
Oh, that's not fair.
I don't mean on vacation. I mean your mind is shot. No, I think that
that's true.
I think that you were so despondent a couple days ago. You really had never seemed as miserable because it felt like it was slipping away. And now you're almost giddy to the point of distraction. You're singing. We've never seen him like this, have we? Can it be possible that Dustin is too happy?
I don't know. I don't know if that's possible. It certainly is unexpected, but it definitely is obvious. Definitely is obvious.
I'll reel it in.
I can't even remember what I was saying before now.
We were talking about Tucker and whether he has changed the
impact
fortunes
on
of
that Cubs
team.
Lineup, yes. Right? Suzuki, PCA,
yes.
He makes them better
all
players,
them.
Mm-hmm. Where Isak Paredes and Bellinger may not have.
Well, it's hard to say that because Cody Bellinger is somebody who did have a pretty productive Cub tenure, and he wasn't the player he needed to be last year. And he's no Kyle Tucker. I'm not saying that, but I also believe they could have been in first place still. Their pitching and their bullpen has been, among the biggest reasons why. Their offense has been tremendous as well. They have up until recently, they've been doing everything right. So I think they would have been. It's certainly more – it's easier to project them to go further this season with Kyle Tucker there.
All caps. Will somebody please make Mully walk back his comment on the Cardinals? 6 exclamation points. Remember, we play the last 3 games of the season. I love Mully, but what a stupid comment. 5 exclamation points. Good Lord. All caps. I'll walk
I think
it
it's
back.
A pretty good rivalry.
I think it's the greatest rivalry in sports history.
No, you don't.
I'm trying to walk it back.
You guys are off the rails today.
Pat Hughes always mentions at the beginning when he's starting the game off,
he
talks about how great the rivalry is. And I totally agree with the Hall of Famer.
No doubt. I mean, it's really, I think yesterday just enhances next week. And the last week of the season, let's hope it's not – if you're a Cub fan, you do not want it to come down to that. You want that last series against the Cardinals to be something that you're positioning your rotation for the playoffs.
Yes, I want Brujan starting at shortstop.
You want PCA getting his rest, and you want Tucker – you want all the things. You want to go into the postseason hot, but you don't want that to matter.
I think Kyle Tucker has made a huge difference in this Cubs team. Period,
I do too.
Story.
I don't. This is being misconstrued. There's no doubt Kyle Tucker has been among their most valuable players. If you're ranking the Cubs impact players this year. It's PCA, Kyle Tucker, Matthew Boyd.
We have a texter. Without Tucker, I don't think PCA has the year he's having. And then we have another one that is no one sent yet, but here's what it says. It says, without Tucker, Cade Horton, useless.
See?
That's a joke.
Yeah, I know. We're getting all from all angles today. I think Kyle Tucker's had a tremendous year. I don't know that all I'm saying is that I don't know if in giving him credit for Seiya Suzuki's power surge
right.
is entirely accurate, because I think Seiya Suzuki has done a lot to make himself more valuable this year. It's the way he's being pitched is different. He's relaxed. It's noticeable. But yeah, Tucker's impact has been more than we or everything that you thought it could be.
Yes.
And it's why the Cubs should do everything in their power to keep him
exactly
in a Cub uniform. Now, does that mean, are those numbers $500 million a year numbers or $500 million contract numbers? Yeah. Let's talk in October or November.
Okay.
You'd like that to be the case, but I think that when they're that similar to the guy that, you know, they're above average. Are they Ohtani like? No. Hmm.
Let's try Eldon. Eldon is listening in Elgin. Hello, Eldon.
Well, it's Elgin Clue, but that's okay. One of the observations I had yesterday was it seemed as though Contreras almost pulled a Carlos Quentin at one of the at-bats. Shota threw a pitch over the plate on a 3-1 count, and Wilson just like slammed his hand into the barrel of the bat several times out of frustration that he let a good pitch go by that he thought he should have hit. My concern isn't so much with Wilson or the rivalry or what's going to happen next week. I think it's filtering a little bit with the intensity of the games being played, where PCA's doing a little bit more of that himself, where you can see walking away from the plate. It looked as though yesterday he wanted to actually try to break the bat over his knee. There's a little bit filtering down. You know, Tucker's had a little bit of that where he tosses the bat out of disgust. And it's just, I think the series is good, the rivalry's good, the pennant race is good. And I think it's all good stuff. But my concern is our players, you know, PCA, Tucker, showing a little frustration. And any kind of calmingness of anybody in that lineup is a good thing.
Well, it's an excellent phone call. I think that without doubt, you have to have sort of an even keel. And you can't get caught up in the highs and lows a la Dustino. But I don't think Craig Counsell lets that get to him. I don't think he ever changes as a guy. I don't think there are times when you see him turn his back for a second, but I don't think you see the frustration or the euphoria kind of coming off of him. I think he maintains a very even keel throughout the course of the season, and that's the message he sends to his players.
No doubt about it. Yeah, he definitely is the guy who has the right temperament for the job. It was 95 degrees there yesterday, and so at the end of a four-game series, when you're getting sick of looking at the other team, probably it's understandable that these guys both were, in Wilson Contreras' case, overly frustrated, and maybe right. Daniel Palencia's case, overly exuberant. But I don't blame either guy. I think it's just part of baseball.
Did you like that the Cubs were en masse ready to mix it up? Oh, you want to go? Let's all go. Like it, that I thought there was good team.
There was support. That was natural, but they're also coming out of the dugout because the game was over.
Right.
I mean, when you say bench is clearing, brouhaha.
It did. They were.
They had to restrain Wilson Contreras.
Everybody was kind of looking at it. Like,
yeah, they were looking at it.
Are we going to go? Because I'm ready to go.
Yeah. It was a baseball fight.
I'll go all day.
It was a baseball fight. You know, the only damage was, you know, the only bruises were to the ego. That was not something that they were going to break out and anybody's going to start swinging. And Daniel Palencia's chest, because he was pounding his chest. As he should have and as he deserved to, because that was a good performance after he settled down. He struck out the side.
Draft day in the NHL. We've got the great Eddie Olczyk next. So much fun to talk to Ed Zoll. We'll do so next. Mully and Haw on the Score.
Do you have a dark curiosity? Heart Starts Pounding, Horrors, Hauntings, and Mysteries is a weekly podcast hosted by me, Kaylin Moore. Each week, I'll take you on a dark journey through terrifying true urban legends, bizarre true crime cases, chilling tales of backwoods horror, and more. So if you're looking to join a passionate community of the darkly curious, check out Heart Starts Pounding on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. And remember, stay curious.
The Chicago Blackhawks is at pick number 3.
It's kind of exciting. You know, the last couple of years haven't been necessarily like chalk, but, you know, teams close to the top of the odds have moved up or stayed the same. And so it's kind of exciting from that standpoint. But third overall, we're going to get a great player. Excited to head into meetings next week with our amateur group and start the process of nailing down where we want to line up the board and what it looks like. And, you know, I think it's we stayed in a good range where I think we're going to be really excited with what we end up with.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score. That's the voice of Kyle Davidson, and he spoke after they got the third overall pick in the draft, and that's the one that will lead the surge of picks tonight. They've got the third pick, the 25th pick, the 34th, the 67th, on and on, 10 picks, and some of them pretty high in this draft, I believe 5 of the top 100. And we are delighted to welcome in the great man himself, Mr. Eddie Olczyk, joins us on the Aturo Tire Hotline. Aturo, your hometown tire, aturo.com. Eddie, good morning. How are you, sir?
Hey, Molly, David. Nice to be with you guys. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
No ponies, but plenty of pucks to talk about.
Well, it is the off season for yours truly, so there will be a lot of ponies here in the very near future. considering the Stanley Cup Final just ended the last week.
You did a great job.
So it's, thank you very much. Yeah, great to be finished, and looking forward to the draft this weekend. We've already had some interesting moves around the National Hockey League, and I'm sure Blackhawk fans are zeroed in on what might take place for Kyle and for Normie, the brass for the Blackhawks, and trying to turn the ship around here. And, you know, you get a couple of young players, and you let them develop. I don't know. I mean, besides the top pick will be Matthew Schaefer for the New York Islanders,
right,
a defenseman. It'd be interesting to see if he starts in the island, but I don't know if there are, again, people that I trust and talk to about the draft. Is I don't know if there's maybe anybody that would be starting with the parent club at the start of the next season. So obviously this is about, you know, maybe 8 months from now or 12 months or maybe 2 or 3 years. So it's all about the future when you talk about the majority of these players in the NHL draft here tonight and tomorrow.
What about a guy like Michael Mesa, who's slated to go second, Eddie? And I think there's some people who are Hawks fans that envision him maybe dropping to third, and if he does, could be on a fast track to Chicago.
Yeah, he seems to be the one player, David, that is getting a lot of attention, obviously, because if Schaefer does go number one, then it's going to be, okay, well, how do the chips fall, you know, and what do specific teams, look at, and what are the needs? And obviously with the Hawks sitting in that third spot, just, you know, you got plan A, plan B, and I can just speak from experience when I was in Pittsburgh some 20 years ago, in those draft meetings with our amateur scouts, and then you're at the draft table, and you know, you got plan A, plan B, and sometimes somebody goes off the chart. But, I think depending on where the Hawks feel their needs are, and, the thought of best player available to needs, to position, not overly big guy Mesa, and then again, the position part. When this team has had success, it is super. It has been, and teams that have won, you're super strong down the middle of the ice. And certainly, you know, Mesa can play both positions. But if Mesa goes two, then you got a guy like Frondell sitting there. You got Porter Marton, who is a center iceman. He's got some bite to his game. He can score. He's a little bit of a different look at the center ice position. So you have plan A, plan B, and then when all, you know, it hits the fan, then all of a sudden, then maybe, you know, there are maneuverability going on. But Misa certainly looks like he has the momentum to end up being the second overall pick to San Jose.
It's fascinating to me because I think that just reading some of the draft stuff, they're saying that the Stanley Cup Finals will steer teams toward bigger players. That you know, there's so much size on display and there's so much physicality in the Stanley Cup Finals that you might want to get some, like the I forget the kid's name, Hagans, the kid from Boston College.
He's
starting to fall a little because he's a little guy, and we know the Hawks have a lot of guys like that. If they end up with a Frondell or the other guy's like 6'3", I think the Matone.
Yeah, Matone is almost 6'3".
Yeah. So would that be sort of a different look given what they already have? They're a kind of a speed team and they don't have great size. Is that what other teams are now going to be looking for based on the Stanley Cup Finals?
It is. I mean, you hear it in all sports. I mean, a copycat type league. But I think the National Hockey League, I think for the most part, I mean, even if you go back, I just go back to the mid 80s where, I mean, guys that were, you know, 6'1"-ish were big guys. Now, all of a sudden, you know, 6'1 guys are probably below average. So I think it is depending on the philosophy for your team and your franchise. I mean, I know the one thing, just looking at it here the last 5 years for the Hawks, I mean, they've gotten much larger on the back end. Now, just because, you become bigger and larger on the back end doesn't mean it's going to lead to success or lead to a change in where you've been. It's getting different varieties and giving yourself the best opportunity. And again, I the experience that I lived, I mean, we were in a major rebuild when I was in Pittsburgh and, you know, very similar to obviously what the Hawks have been going through here recently. And it's, you look at it and you look at, you know, how do you build? You build through the middle of the ice. You got to build in net, you got to build in goal, you got to build on defense, and you got to build at the center ice position. So, you're right. I mean, a kid like Hagans, I mean, there are a lot of people thinking that he was going to be one or two, and, you know, he's lucky if he's 5'8". I mean, I know he was listed at 5'10.5" for the majority of the season. And then, he had his official, weight and height measurements at the combine. And so look at, you can, if the player is what you need and what you feel can be one of those difference makers, regardless of the position and you need, then you jump up and you take them. But I think, to your point, though, Molly, with, you know, you look at a team, you know, like Florida, you know, Edmonton is a little, they're a little bigger than people realize. I mean, I think in the overall scheme of it, if you are a tad bigger than most teams, I think, and your goal is obviously to win the Stanley Cup, you need some guys that have some heaviness and have some length, and that is seemed to be the way that the NHL has been going here probably the last, probably 5 to 7 years.
Eddie, I love the NHL draft, but I am getting a little tired of it meaning so much to the Blackhawks. Every year for the past couple, we've now looked at them drafting high and adding prospects to this rebuilding project that, frankly, it's time to win. And I just wonder, as we transition from the draft into next week's free agency, how ready are they to be aggressive in free agency, to bring in the kind of player? I know Mitch Marner is everybody's dream free agent signing, but I wonder if it's realistic for the Hawks. I wonder what is realistic for the Hawks, because it's great to talk about prospects. They'll welcome in a couple tonight, and we'll think that they're, you know, on the right track. Are they on the right track, and how close are they?
Well, as far as Marner, I mean, I've been, my get is that he looks like he's going to be heading out west. Now, where is that going to be? Is that Vegas? Is that Utah? Is that Los Angeles? Is that Anaheim? I'm not sure. I would probably put my horse racing cash on Vegas. I don't know if he's going to be in the Midwest, or I don't think he's going to stay in the East Coast. But in just saying that on the free agent part of it is, I mean, look, you do have obviously some some major building pieces, obviously, with Bedard, and you guys know how I feel about Frankie Nazar. He performed exceptionally well. Talking to people with the U.S. World Championship team, like, he really, really turned some heads and opened up some eyes. I mean, he played outstanding there for Team USA, winning a gold medal for the first time in 300 years. I mean, it was an incredible feat for Team USA. But he's like, I mean, I look at him like he is on the, I mean, he's there. Like, I mean, he's got the ability to be one of those kind of difference makers. And when you do have difference makers, and yeah, it's been a tough go, David, here recently, and probably too long for, you know, for obviously for the Blackhawk fans and for Danny and ownership. But, you know, you're right. It's some of these young players that they've gotten have to take the next step, and Nazar has certainly done that. I mean, they need Connor Bedard to really take a major step this summer and going into next season. And look, I keep going back to what I'm saying, but like I said, I lived it at the highest level as a coach in the National Hockey League, where you go in a certain direction, you're going to rebuild. You try to make sure you have your right veteran guys like a Nick Foligno around your young players that you're building, and it's so hard. And when you dig yourself a hole, it's just really hard to get out of it. But they've got some young players that Blackhawk fans still have not seen that have a chance to be able to help. Now, whether that's this year or the following year, I mean, I have no idea, but you have to know where you were, where you are, and where you're trying to get to. And I think they certainly are in the process of that. And, you know, when it comes to free agency, it's, you know, look, I mean, players have options, and, you know, what are they going to need? And is the one thing I did learn, and I know that is standard pat and gotten really stronger as it's gone on. It's almost like the National Hockey League has started to finally, I think, have looked at free agency a lot like recruiting. And I was only recruited, you know, one time when I was deciding whether or not I was going to go to college or not. But it feels like it has gotten to that where you have people coming to your home, you have people meeting you, you have people selling. They have, you know, videos like John Lester, you know, when the Cubs were trying to sell Wrigley, you know, Wrigley Field and the Cubs in the city of Chicago, to John Lester to come win a World Series here in Chicago. The National Hockey League has started here in the last little while of really the recruitment aspect and having a presence of when you are trying to sell your team and your brand and your city to these free agents to come. And that's become a really, really important part of it. And players, you should want to play in the greatest city in the world. Like, you know, I'm obviously biased. I'm from here. I mean, I love this place. I love the Blackhawks. I always will. Like, I would tell it, but you'd be foolish. Like, you know, when I talked to Coach Jeff Blashill, about the prospects of coming to Chicago, I mean, he knew my feelings because we had talked about it over the years. I mean, it's just like it's the selling now of what you have and what you're trying to get to, and that's such an important part of these meetings that you're having with the agents and the players and their wives or their girlfriends or their family. Sometimes their parents are involved. I mean, that is such an important part of it. And, you know, and look at that goes for coaches too. I mean, mm-hmm. It goes for what you're trying to do. So I things you learn over time, and you talk to a lot of people, and that is such an important part of it. And I know for Kyle and for Normie, you know, they're trying everything that they can, and they love the fast track and get this thing really turned around and to be playing really meaningful games in March and April. And you get that opportunity. It starts with the draft and a lot of picks, as you guys mentioned before you brought me on, to be able to have some. You have assets. Obviously, mm-hmm. You have assets, and then it's just a matter of how you can add on to those, whether it's from within or from the outside.
Great stuff, Eddie. Thank you. And hey, congratulations. Heard that you're doing work with the Hall of Fame, and obviously we know that Duncan Keith got in, which is awesome, and I'm sure there'll be more players from that team.
Congrats,
on the way.
Eddie.
Yeah, congrats.
Well, it was an honor to be a part of my first year, to be a part of the selection committee, and it's an incredible process. But it's when I saw Dunk's name go up there, rightfully so, it was a no-brainer. And yeah. Look at the Blackhawks have had many, many great players, obviously Chelly and Dougie Wilson, Pierre Palat. But I would make the argument without question that when you look at the body of work of Duncan Keith and longevity and the wins and the individual awards, is that rightfully so going to the Hockey Hall of Fame, because I believe he is the greatest Blackhawk defenseman ever to put on that sweater. And that's saying something with some of the greats that have played here. So it was an honor to be a part of it. Congratulations to the Hawks and to Dunk, and I look forward to talking to you guys down the road, and always appreciate you guys having me on.
Thanks, Edzo.
Thanks, Edzo. Great stuff. That Hi. Is Eddie Olczyk.
I agree with him, too.
Yeah.
I'm Duncan Keith. Yeah.
Yeah.
That solidified it.
Yeah.
Well, really interesting. He said something really interesting we should talk about when we get back.
312-644-6767. It's Mully and Haw on the Score.
Well, it is draft day.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score. Tonight's the night, the NHL draft. Blackhawks with 10 picks. They've got the 3rd and the 25th in the first round. And they, man, David, they are loaded with draft picks.
They are.
2 first-rounders, 2 second-rounders. Then next year, 2 first-rounders, 3 second-rounders.
The draft has become the big thing.
Then you go to 27. They got just 1 draft pick, 2 seconds. I mean, come on now.
Well, talking to Eddie, and we don't have enough time in this segment to get to it fully, and it's a broader topic for another day, maybe later in the show, but it just made me wonder. You know, the draft is too important to the Blackhawks every year because – we know what they did. They bottomed out because they had to and because they got Connor Bedard, and now they're on the way back. But it's a long way back. And there's some belief around the National Hockey League, or you hear from people, you read stuff, and you hear stuff, just you wonder how far the Hawks have progressed, really. They need to make up some ground. And that's a pretty deep hole they dug for themselves. I wonder, Mully, if the Bulls in the same building – are affected by how far the Hawks have to go at any, you know, after the teardown, and if it had any effect on the Bulls' philosophy in not tearing it down, because the Bulls aren't tearing it down, the Bulls haven't torn it down.
No, they haven't,
and they've received criticism for not tearing it down, and they are pretty much trying to stay in the middle. It's a murky middle. It's not where you want to be.
NBA purgatory.
It's NBA purgatory, but you know what I mean? It's like, well, I don't think the Bulls are affected by it, but I think it's also instructional to look at 2 of the co-tenants of the United Center, and I understand why you would choose one over the other.
Yes.
I do understand why you choose to be competitive, try to stay competitive year in and year out, because there's climb out is very, very hard and arduous.
There's got to be a middle ground. There's got to be a different way of doing it, and unfortunately, the problem that kicks in is when you look at OKC and you look at Indiana, kind of did it middle ground.
They did.
But you look at the teams that are succeeding, and you kind of say to yourself, well, what the Bulls are doing is not the recipe toward success. But then you look at the Blackhawks, and you don't even know, like, when is this over? When are they out of this? They've got tons of young players. They've got 0 middle class. They got a couple of older players. I mean, they've got to start getting competitive, and makes you wonder if the way they're doing it is leaving a guy like Bedard on his own too much and incapable of fitting into a winning program, because you're on your own, son.
Yeah, it makes you wonder about that a little bit, and yet with him able to sign a contract extension next week as early as July 1st, you hope that he's saying all the right things. He talked to Mark Lazarus in The Athletic. He sounded very amenable to a long-term contract. He wants to stay in Chicago. I hope that they're able, and they're on the right track of surrounding him with the kind of talent that allows him to flourish. But it's going to take a little longer than people thought, and I just wonder how that's going over and if that's noticed by the other team at the United Center that's not choosing to go that route.
I love what Edzo had to say about Frankie Nosar, because I think he's right about that. I think that kid has taken steps, but they need more than just that.
Yeah. He really is. He had a great summer.
Yes.
He had a great offseason. Yep. He's a terrific interview, too. So good for him and good for them. And it is a big night tonight for the Hawks.
Coom Dog joins us next. Ron Coomer with Mully and Haw on Chicago Sports Radio 6-7 of the Score.